All right, well, welcome to our discussion of rationing the vaccine. We realize that we're in a very exciting moment, very trying moment, but also a very exciting moment in history, where perhaps we're on the verge of receiving access to the actual vaccines that have been produced for the COVID-19 crisis. And this raises a lot of ethical issues of rationing, because they cannot produce enough to obviously vaccinate everybody just right yet, but rather it will take time. And people have been talking about healthcare workers, older people, and the question is, how does it work? Who should get it? What if you have a lot of money? Can you buy it? What if you're a doctor? Can you give it to yourself? What if you happen to have access to it? What if you're the company that produces it? Do you have rights to vaccinate first? So we have a lot of questions, and of course, Jewish law always has something to say about it. Also, we'd like to look at how a secular law, secular ethics would examine this question. So let's begin at the beginning and let's get started. Rationing the vaccine. So in secular medical ethics, there have been a number of treatises on ethics, and there's one book by Beauchamp and some other fellow, and they say that ethics, modern medical ethics, are based on four principles. They used to talk about non-malfeasance and beneficence, but now we also talk about autonomy and justice. And of course, I'm sure Dr. Brooks is very familiar with these ideas. I just want to sort of lay them out there for a second for everybody, in case anybody doesn't, not so familiar. So from the and let's analyze this question from this perspective. So autonomy, what issues of autonomy come up with the vaccine? Well, can you force isolation during the epidemic? And can you force vaccination? I've already heard a number of people I come in contact with who say, oh, I'm not going to take that thing, and they don't want to be forced to do it. But of course, if you were a healthcare worker, they may demand that you do it. Currently, it's normal that they demand that you take a flu vaccine. You know, is this different or what? We heard a lecture the other week from Shammai and Sharon Grossman. They were saying that this is one of the more tested vaccines ever. There are 40,000 people participated in some of these studies, so it may have taken less time than others, but it's been very rigorous, and there's so many eyes on this cause and this question. Number two, non-malfeasance, not doing any harm. So there's potential to do harm to people. I guess, you know, some might argue, might think that, you know, giving someone a vaccine might do some harm to you. There's also a question of letting people know. During the epidemic, we have issues of HIPAA, of letting people know. In other words, let's say, as a congregant, you tell me that you have COVID. So I don't want to associate with you during this time, and neither do other people in the congregation. So if I tell other people, but you didn't tell me I could tell anyone. So if I tell other people that you have COVID, so on the one hand, I'm making sure I don't do any harm, but I'm also, maybe I'm damaging your reputation. So a lot of interesting questions. Beneficence, doing the most good. What would that look like to do the most good? Who would you give it to? If you want to do the most good for it, would you give it to the old, to the young? What would you do? Then justice, like, you know, just because America can afford it, or just because, you know, a particular person can afford it, does that mean they should get it and other people shouldn't? What about justice? So what about other nations? So these are big questions. Whether to save those at the highest risk of dying or to save the most lives, right? Maybe if I give it to all the young people, then all those young people nobody will die from it. And there's a lot of young people. There are fewer very old and sick people. But if I give it to them, they have the highest risk of dying. But so I'll give it to all those people, but they might die anyway. It may not be effective for them. Second question is how to deal with the conflict between saving most lives versus saving the most lives in the long run. So we save fewer lives initially or more lives in the long run. So Bloom was telling me she heard a piece about conflict of the placebo. During the summer, a lot of people were taking these tests, these trial runs of these vaccines. Some people get the placebo, some people get the real thing. So if you were a doctor and you're trying to heal your patient, and you heard that they were running a test on your patient, say, wait a second, we're trying to heal this patient, and you're giving them placebo? Or I have a very, you know, at-risk patient, and you're going to give them placebo? So, but in the long run, if you can, only if you do the placebo for some, controlled experiment, then you can save the lives of many. Do you save the most lives or the most in need? Again, that will pit the younger against the older. Who are the essential workers? If you say, well, the essential workers should get it, who's essential? What about the fireman? What about the entertainer? What about the NFL player? If some are lost, society won't function. Lives could be lost if they're not around. If there are no doctors, lives could be lost. If there are no firemen, lives could be lost. If there are no nurses, lives could be lost. So are those the most essential workers? What about religious workers, et cetera, et cetera? So there's so many questions that come up. So as we mentioned, what are our responsibilities to poorer countries morally? How would we fit in if it doesn't? By the way, I have to thank a particular doctor, I don't have the name with me, from Yeshiva University, who was a student at Einstein, and he wrote an article that appears on Wayu Torah, where I got a lot of these sources. Happy to share with anyone if they want to know the exact article where I got many of these sources. Then there's the fair innings philosophy. It says everyone has a right to a full life. This is prioritized saving the lives of younger people, saying, look, wait, we have to save these guys' lives because they haven't had a fair innings yet. They only, they're just kids. They only had, then they're in the third inning. So we've got to get them down to the at least 60, 70 years. People who are 60, 70 years old. Well, they already got to fair innings. So maybe they should not be prioritized. These are secular views. We'll get to the religious view in a moment. Investment and refinement says this philosophy gives priority to those who have been invested into but have not reaped the rewards of such an investment. The philosophy gives priority to people between the ages of 13 and 40 whom society has invested but has not received any returns on the investment. So it's an investment philosophy. So clearly, these are not the most lofty kinds of... The second one is not the most lofty kind of thing. It's a matter of, you know, cost-benefit. The first one... is interesting, you know. Do we prioritize young over the old? So I met someone who did what they call that Peace Corps. They said that in their society, when there's a little bit of food, they would ration it by giving it to the old because you want to respect them. And the children would die. And the Americans tended to view it the opposite way: that you're old already. Who cares if you're around? The main thing is your children should survive, so the society will survive. So that's our orientation. But then again, it's not very nice to be mean to older people. So big, big challenges. Okay. Now we get started with the Jewish sources. And the first source is a difficult one. It's a difficult one to look at. It may shock some people. But I think we can glean some interesting things from it. It's mentioned in Horiot. It's an obscure part of the Talmud for some. It's obscure. For others, it's basic. Anyway, it says, a man takes precedence over a woman in matters of saving life and the restoration of lost property. And a woman takes precedence over a man in respect to clothing and ransoming from captivity. So if two people, you know, one of these cops and robbers shows and they put the gun to someone's head and you have to save one of the people, so claims that you save the man first. Why? Maybe he has more mitzvot, something like that. What about if they're about to abduct a woman versus a man? So that's different because a woman could be taken advantage of, and they may have in mind more than just killing. So there the woman takes precedence. We don't want her to be defiled. A priest takes precedence over all Israelite. So that's interesting. The priest takes precedence. So there are some Jews who are holier than others. An Israelite over a bastard. That's interesting. Just your status makes a difference. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. His parents had committed adultery. So why is he punished? But his holiness is somehow questioned. This order applies only when other attributes are equal. But if the bastard is a Torah scholar and the high priest is unlearned, the scholarly bastard, mamzer is the Hebrew expression, takes precedence over the ignorant high priest. So Torah scholarship is more important. Why? What's the idea? So turns out that we're not going to use this as a category for deciding who gets a vaccine or any other kind of triage that we comes up. We just don't use it. But the question is, can you learn something from it? Who's a wise person? One who can learn from every person. So this Mishnah must have something to teach us. So the Rambam in his commentary says something that's very significant. Let me just let Jack Cohen into our discussion here. Welcome to the family of Jack Cohen, who's here with us. So the Rambam says, why? It sounded like from the Mishnah that the question was holiness, who's holier? We just had a Kohen who came on, so the Kohen would get precedence and the vaccine over the non-Kohen. But the Rambam introduces another idea. Misha, he says, that's only if the Kohen is wise. Whoever is wiser, get more Torah scholarship, they get the vaccine. Why? The Rambam says, the Chacham to'al tola umag dolamot. The wise person, the Torah scholar, his value to the community is very large. But one person who's the most utilitarian is the king, even though he's an amaretz, even though he's a fool. King comes first. Why? Utility. Toelet. What's the toelet? What's the value in saving this person? Utility. So this might argue that when you get the vaccine, people of the highest utility to society should be saved. Doctors, right? I don't think the lawyers need it. But doctors, healthcare workers, firemen, right? The greatest utility. Maybe even the sports figures, right? Some people, they can't have Sunday. They wouldn't know what to do on Sunday. They didn't have a football game to watch. So maybe that's also utility. Certainly the king, the president, well, would that be unethical if Trump got the vaccine first? Would people be up in arms? How come he got it? According to this Rambam, no. Toilet, the leader has the most toilet, the most value. So that's interesting. So this Mishnah, which starts off as kind of, what's it talking about? Men take precedence over women. What's going on here? But turns out that the commentaries on this Mishnah do speak about the idea of utilitarian value. And that's one way of making a decision. Maybe not the best way, but it's a way. The good news is that Rabbi Auerbach, who's the major decisor of the 20th century and is a good compatriot, Rabbi Feinstein, they don't think that we use, precedence of men over women. So that's not, this Mishnah is not the law. But nonetheless, it tells us something. The Gemara Bar Metzia is a famous Gemara about triage, which we have to bring into the picture, and that is the jug of water story. You may have heard this in any ethical Jewish story. Two are traveling on a journey from far from civilization. One has a pitcher of water. There's only one pitcher, and he has it. If both drink, they'll both die. But if only one drinks, he can reach civilization. And Batura taught, it's better that they should both drink and die than one live and behold his companion's death. You don't want one person to live and the other one will see the death of his friend. It's not right. Until Rabbi Akiva came and said, you're wrong. Your brother may live with you. You should make sure your brother's in great shape. You got to give him a job. You got to give him charity. With you, your life takes precedence over his life. So if you have the jug, it says one has a pitcher. You have the jug, you keep that jug. So then, from that perspective, we have a doctor on the call here. So if the doctor has the vaccine, says, he doesn't want to be self-serving. He'll serve all the other people first. He'll be the last one. No, since it's his vaccine, if indeed it belongs to him, if he was able to procure some, 100 vaccine shots, the vaccinations, then he gets the first one because his life takes precedence over the other if it's his. And if he was administered those things to give to old people and he's not old, then he doesn't get it. But if it belongs to the doctor, then he gets it first. If it belongs to the hospital, it makes sense they would give it to their employees first because, A, they're essentially utilitarian. And secondly, once something is yours, your jug, you get precedence over the other. It's yours. You have a right to save your life first and then put on the seatbelt of your neighbor. Gemara Nedarim takes this very far, this notion of your life comes first. You see, you might say, okay, your life comes first, but let's say I don't really need the water that much. You know, I might die of dehydration, but I'm a pretty rugged guy. I had a good breakfast. But this person I'm walking with, they're in really bad shape. So then what happens? How far can I go in saying, well, I get it first, it's mine. Yeah, but, you know, take me. I'm relatively healthy, right? I'm younger than some people are, right? There are people even younger and healthier. So such a person should take a vaccine. Yeah, they're in danger of getting COVID. A person under 20, who it's very rare for them to get very sick from it. It happens, but correct me if I'm wrong, doctor. Anything we're saying, correct me if I'm wrong. But that person should take it over someone else. After all, for the child, it's just a luxury. What is it? You might be a bad spreader to other people, but right? But to the old person, it's serious. So the question is, to what extent is your life over the other person? How far does that go? So the Gemara says contradiction between Rabbi Yossi. Let me just give my own translation. My angel b'nei ayir, if you have a well, your well, the well comes for you first before people outside that city. What about your animals and the other animals? Your animals come first. What about your laundry and the laundry of others? Your laundry come first. What about other people's lives, right? They need the water to survive. And you need the water for your laundry. You have plenty of water to live, but you just need extra for laundry. The lives of the other people's lives come before your laundry. Right? My laundry comes before their laundry, but their lives come before my laundry. So there's a little bit of a hitch here. If for me the vaccine is just like doing laundry, I mean, it's nice, but I'm not really afraid of dying anyway. Again, I'm not the best example. I'm over 55. So, you know, I am susceptible to being dangerously ill. But let's say I was 25, right? So then you say, how bad do I need it? For me, it's like laundry. I mean, when we get a sniffle, what's the problem? But get a bad headache. But for the other guy, the one who has diabetes or some lung disease or emphysema or whatever, give me some, what's the other one? Asthma. So for that person, it's not just laundry. For them, it's their life. So maybe they should come first. So this is also instructive in thinking about this. Why does the laundry, your laundry come first? So he says, your laundry comes first. He says, there is Rabbi Yossi's opinion that the, I don't know if it's on the sheet here. Yeah, Rabbi Yossi's opinion is very radical. Rabbi Yossi's opinion is that the laundry of that city comes before the drinking of another city. But the other city is going to die. He says, so you could say that you always come first. I know I'm younger and healthier. I get it first. I'm the healthcare worker. It's my vaccine. So I get it first. But even though for me, it's like laundry. But for the other guy, he's going to die. There's a decent chance of his dying from it. I come first. The Ron says, why does the laundry come first? Not because I'm always first. No, not necessarily. Could be that when you can't do laundry, there's so much anguish from that. That's also a livelihood. In other words, it's like mine not walking around with dirty clothes. That is life-saving, to me. So it's an interesting question. How far do we go that you come before the other people? I want to point out that we live like that every day. We don't say, wait a minute, but I've got a computer. I've got this nice pillow over here. I've got all these things. I have, a five-bedroom house. So you say, what do I need all that for? There are people starving in Africa. So we say, look, my extra bookcases that I have, extra books that I bought, extra computers that we have from the family, that's more important for me. That's like my laundry. It comes before the life of someone in, you name it, Africa, Indonesia, wherever there may be poverty. So you say, well, that's disgusting. That's horrible. Maybe not. Maybe we have a right. It's not very mushy or it doesn't sound so altruistic, but it is. The altruism is you've got to take care of yourself. And taking care goes to a long degree. And therefore, if you could get the vaccine over someone else, maybe you should. Maybe you should. All right, let's get some of the post-scheme, some of the actual bottom line. So Rabbi Oshri was a rabbi who was consulted during the Warsaw Ghetto, during different ghettos during the Holocaust. He survived. He moved to Lower East Side, and he wrote some of these books about some of the questions that he had about his like 8 or 9 volumes. And Shalom Shuvot Imam Makim, Shlomo Zalman Urbach was a great posek in Israel, one of the big greatest poskim or decisors of Jewish law in the 20th century. And Tzitzel Eliezer was also a big rabbi in the 20th century. So Rabbi Oshri says, look, the most important thing is what saves the most people? The most people. Not the one who are most sick. Shlomo Zalman Urbach says age doesn't matter. You don't necessarily save the young because they have more, you know, more innings left. The Tzitzel Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg said, all things being equal, we would give medicine to someone who is definitely in danger rather than someone who might be in danger. This is a major Jewish principle that something that's for sure always beats things that are doubtful. So someone who is in definitely in danger gets it rather than someone who might be in danger. So there, that would favor who? The older people. The older people are definitely in danger, right? Maybe as a 55-year-old, pretty good health. Maybe I feel, thank God, maybe I feel like I'm not in so much danger. So maybe they come first. Questionable claim cannot take away from definite claim. That's a general rule. Cicely says that general rule in the Talmud applies to medicine, where he states, we drop a suffix and hold on to a vada. So if for sure if this will save so-and-so, it might save the other guy, I've got to give it to the one who definitely saves. So that favors the young, because you might say, let's say they determine that this vaccine is 50% effective for old people and 95% for young people. Again, I don't know if they did. I think they just said it's 95% effective. But let's say it was less effective for older people. So then the person who might be effective for, he can't take precedence over the one who is definitely effective. Primogadim says the suffix does not exist in the case of Vada. If there's someone who definitely needs something, then forget about the guy who might need it. Tzitzel Yezus continues, however, if an older person gets the disease, they will definitely die. Here's a tricky one. And even if he gets the vaccine, there's a chance he'll die anyway. Okay, so it's not clear that getting this shot is going to save him. However, if the young person gets the vaccine, he'll definitely get saved. Vaccine is given to the younger person. And this is kind of disappointing. You know, you hope Jewish law favors the old over the young or something, but it's one of the big questions. He says, no. Favor the young. In other words, if based on laws of probability, the number of lives to be saved by our efforts would be equal, then we will save people who will definitely be saved, as opposed to people who only have a chance of being saved, which might be the older people. So it might favor the young over the old. Rabbi Yoshi mentioned we can conclude during a pandemic, there is an obligation to save as many lives as possible at all costs. On the other hand, in a private communication with Dyachovsky, I forgot how to pronounce his name. He told the author, the author I mentioned before, who has an article about rationing a vaccine. It's a nice article in the NYU Torah. You can check it out. So let me just let in another doctor, Dr. Levy. Welcome. told the author that there is a value in saving people whom society needs in order to preserve a functional society. So there's a value in saving doctors, Indian chiefs, saving firemen, things like that, nurses. This is based on the principle of social utility. For example, it would be hard to imagine a world in which the President of the United States or any other head of state did not receive preventative care. At the same time, Rabbi Dyachovsky told the author, that's this particular author, is a doctor at Einstein, we must vaccinate the super vector, young children, because they are considered rodfim. They're pursuing, others. They're endangering others. So if one is obligated to kill a person so that he does not kill others, how much more is one obligated to save a person so he doesn't kill others? So you want to save the children so they don't kill, God forbid, the grandparents. Rabbi Ashri wrote as follows. To go, that was from that article. Here, let's take a look at Rabbi Ashri directly. He says, "Vaz betoch hamulata be'ala nishalti shila gorli." The following question was raised during the Holocaust. A very major question. He said, "I would tell the moritz that can the capos, the guys in charge of the community, the leaders of the community in the ghetto, can they take these cards that were given to save people? And a certain number of cards. If you had one of those white cards, you could be saved. Everybody else would be deported to you know where, to the concentration camps. Can you give them out according to the enemy who gave out these cards? And you'll say they want all the strong people. So you give it to all the strong people. You let everybody else be shipped off. Because after all, anybody who gets a card, that means someone else doesn't get a card. And you're sending the other person who didn't get a card. Every time you give out a card, you're stopping someone else from getting a card. Because we're talking about tremendous communities, 15,000 people, only 5,000 cards. So every card you give out, someone else dies. And it's all based on the German Yimach Shemam, their decisions, and you're supporting them. So how can you choose one life over the other? Maybe you shouldn't give it to this person, give it to the other person. So what should they do? That was the question Rabbi Ashri was asked. And the answer was to give it to save as many people as you can. He based it on a Rambam in the Yesodei Torah, in the Laws of Fundamentals. Rambam says, if idolaters would demand one of the group of women saying, yield to us one among you and we'll defile her, and we won't defile everybody. So let all be defiled rather than surrender them one soul to Israel. So it was based on the Mishnah and Trumot, I think. So he says, likewise, if idolaters will say to a group of men, yield us one of you and we'll kill him, if not, we'll kill you all. Let them all be killed rather than surrender one. So you can't give out cards to save people, which thereby kills other people. And he says, you can't do it. Unless they said, give us this person, that's different. In any event, so we continue based on that. Therefore, it's forbidden for the elder council in that ghetto, I think he was in Kovna, the Kovna ghetto, to give out these cards, these white cards, and therefore to hand over the other Jews who didn't get a card to death, to the Germans. Rather, leave it the way it is, and because some people say, even if they said, give us this guy, you can't give him over. So therefore, just leave it the way it is. Don't give out the cards. That's what Rav Ashri said. Then he says, well, but then I saw in Shulchan Aruch, I saw something in the Court of Jewish Law, says Rav Ashri, who's a survivor of the Holocaust, but who lived through the Holocaust and was asked these questions, these horrific questions during the Holocaust. He says there's a shach. He says that there's a king who says that this particular, or one or two rich people, and there's a Jew who's politically active. He can try to get this fellow off of this hook. Maybe there's a high tax for a particular Jew, so he can get him off. But you know that if he gets this Jew out of trouble, he's going to put the tax on other Jews. So he quotes from a particular tshuva who said, if the king already put it on these particular people, and he said that these are the guys who are going to get this tax, and they're under his net, so then you can try to get them out if it's not going to help hurt other people. But, and then he says, you could try to get these two people out, even though clearly two other people will get into it. And he brings an example from a story. So Rav Ashri was not inclined to give out the cards, because if you give the card to this one, the other one dies. And he found the Shach, found the commentary in the Court of Jewish Law, who says that you try to do what you can for those you can do for. And the fact that it's going to lead to troubles for others, that's their problem. So if you could somehow, you know, get a vaccine for a couple of people, but because of that, other people will miss out. You could, according to this, you could do what you could for some. So he says, in the case of the cards, he says maybe they never said particular people. The Germans never said who would be killed. Just said 5,000 people get a card. So whoever doesn't have a car dies. So then they could try to help those who they could save. You try to save who you can save. Those you can't save, you can't save. So by giving the vaccine to these people, you don't give it to the other people, but you try to save as many people as you can. So you say, well, if I choose the old over the young or the young over the old, then the other people die. Well, or some people among the other people will die. Well, if you save the most people you could, then that's better than the alternative. He says, but then that night, the rabbi who was asked this question in the Kovno Ghetto, he was thinking, and he was all night, he was learning, and he was thinking about it, he was researching it. And after thinking about it a lot, he decided like this. Because I think he's talking about the rabbi of Kovno. If, God forbid, a decree came out against the Jewish community to destroy them, and there's a possibility that through various ways you could save some of the people, the leaders have to do everything they can to save those people they can. Of course, you know, in the end, very often these leadership councils, they would save one group, only to be told a month later that now they have to kill the other people too. So it didn't always work out. But this is the principle he set aside, was that the more people you can save, the better. So again, I might argue for saving, you know, a whole bunch of young people against fewer older people who perhaps might die anyway. What about grabbing the white card from someone else? There were people who were, the Jews became like, you know, they became reduced to like fighting. They would have fist fights. Who gets these cards? There would be cards. And then everyone would grab a card to be saved from the Nazis. So similarly, what if there's a vaccine, you know, can you grab a vaccine? You know, what if, you know somebody, you can pay a few extra bucks and you could somehow get a vaccine when maybe you didn't deserve it. There's no special reason why you should have it. You're not a healthcare worker or particularly old, particularly young or whatever. So he says, well, that if you saw something that's really bad that's going to happen, you can try to save yourself, even though through that harm may come to someone else. So each person is entitled to grab for themselves. So it's like a free-for-all. It's like a kiddush. You know, it's like it's a very impolite kind of thing where no one has to be polite. Everyone can try to grab the vaccine for themselves, which raises a question about the original story we saw about the one jug. There's only one jug in the desert and it belongs to you, so you get to keep it. Yeah, but the thing is, can I hit you over the head to take it from you? Based on this, it sounds like I could, but I don't think that would be a good idea. I don't think that's generally assumed. Older versus younger. So the Tzitzel, yes, the great Rabbi Elazar Waldenberg, one of the great authorities. He was overshadowed by many others, but he's certainly one of the great authorities in the 20th century. He wrote many books about it. And he was also very big into medical ethics. So he says, what do you do when there are two dangerous, ill people and you have a certain amount of medicine that would be good for one of them? What should you do if one of them is only doubtfully sick and the other one is definitely very much in danger? So did you give it to the person who's definitely sick? So according to Radvaz, it comes out, Shelo Rak, Shein Mechuya V'kach, not only Ela She'ein Lo Lachmir B'Zed Chamuzu Kuzo. He says, Afilu Sofi Chayav Shelo, if you have the vaccine, then even if you, well, I don't need it that much. I'm healthy. I don't have any problems. So let's give it to the other guy. No. If you have it, not only do you not have to give it to someone else, you have an obligation to save yourself first. Your life comes first. That's what he said based on the Radvaz. Or he saw the Prima Gadim, a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, on the Code of Jewish Law, who says that if one person is definitely in danger, the doctors say so, and one, you know, he probably could be okay, and there's only one vial of medicine, it's not good enough for two. So the one who's definitely ill, he comes first. So that's the opposite approach. So, but he says, look, says Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, he says, look, if it belongs to you, if it belongs to someone, a third party, then there's no idea that, you know, your life comes first. I'm the doctor. I can give it to whoever I want. I already have the vaccine. Now the question is, who gets it, this one or that one? So then you can't give it to one where the other one will die. But if you should give it to the one who definitely might die. So, based on the Prima Gadim, you should give it to what? The one who definitely, there's a general principle in Jewish law, the definite always beats the possible. It comes up in monetary matters. If I say, if you say, you owe me $100, and I say, well, I'm not sure, I might. I could, but I'm not sure. Well, then you win, because you were sure and I wasn't sure. So the certainty always wins. Now, there is a minority view that whoever is a greater of this, Rabbi Micha Halevi, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Gevor Nachlatz Yitzchak, a particular rabbi in Israel, not so famous, he argues on this and says that he states one saves the person who has the most risk of dying, does not look at the greater public health picture. He said, well, if I save all these people at great risk, then I won't be able to save the large population, you know, let's say the younger people. There are millions and millions of younger people, and a certain swath of older people. So if I give it to all the young people, so then all those people will be safe, and that saves millions of lives. And then there are people who are very dangerously ill. What does he say? He saves the person who has the most risk. We don't worry about the numbers. But most people say no, that whatever will save the most lives, that's the most important, even if you have to overlook some people who are more sick. What about healthcare workers? So first of all, healthcare work professionals may not go to work. They're not immunized, right? They can't go to work. Secondly, the healthcare worker is in dangerous way, and they may have the greatest need for the medications. Finally, the physicians have possession, right? The healthcare worker is part of an institution, like let's say a hospital or the doctor's office, and that those institutions own the vaccine. So they can say, oh, we'll give it to the customer who's going to pay us $50. No, you have it, you use it. You come first, your life comes first. So there are three reasons why the healthcare worker comes first. Number one, they won't be able to help others if they're not immunized. They'll give it to others. Number two, they're in danger, they're in special need. And number three, they often, because they administer it, they have it, so to speak. Hard to define that exactly, but they own it. And when you own something, like the jug of water, you come first. So there may be other people included as essential workers: water, electrical, transportation, gas station personnel, police, firefighters, livery services. So social infrastructure and health as a relationship. So all these very interesting footnotes from that article that I saw again on YU Torah. You can get to the, if someone wants to see the original article on which some of these sources are based, I can get you that article, no problem. So moving along to the Tzitz Eliezer. Yeah, so we mentioned the Radvaz, mentioned the Prima Gadim, etc. Now, finally, let's end with the Mincha Shlomo of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He was really the main decisor of the 20th century, and he was particularly involved in medical ethics issues. We have, there's a chaplain in California who's often in touch with him, another rabbi who wrote the Encyclopedia of Medical Halakha, who's always in touch with him. He was very involved in medical ethics. So he says as follows, and we'll conclude with this. Who gets priority for medicine and also ventilators, machshir neshama? So he mentions the Prima Gadim, we mentioned before, commentary in the Code of Jewish Law. So there's one who's definitely ill, based on the doctors, and the other one is maybe ill, but they could survive. And there's only one vaccine to give to them. You give to the one who's most ill. So therefore, you have to consider who is most ill. You give them the respirator, and with the possibilities of healing. In other words, the guy, you're not going to give a respirator to somebody who's likely to die. However, he says, "Chashud begil lo ba'a klal b'chashbon." The question of age does not come into play. That's what he says. He says, it's true that Mishnah we saw, that men are supposed to come before women, Kohen is supposed to come before Levi, but I think that nowadays it's hard to use that rule. So he throws that out. But to give a ventilator from one person who's sick to another one who's more sick, or to two people, or to someone, I'm sorry, not two people, but to someone who has a greater chance of being saved, I'm not sure about that. Because it could be that once someone's on a ventilator, then it's like his ventilator. At that point, his life comes first. And he's exempt from this, that sick person is exempt from trying to give his ventilator to someone else. That's his ventilator. He got it. So I realize that's not very utilitarian. Some people may not find that very satisfying, but that's what he thought. That's based on that idea that your jug of water comes first, even though the other one could use it more. Or if you already started to engage in helping this sick person, and then the nurse comes in and says, "Wick, quick, don't give him that shot. The other guy in the other room needs it more." So he says, "No, I'm already engaged in this mitzvah. I'm exempt from the other mitzvah. I'm already helping this person. I can't help the other person." Kind of an unusual way of thinking. Then he says, you're exempt from helping the other one. You may be forbidden to leave one person when you're in the middle of helping one person to help, when they're both in danger, even though there's a greater chance to save the other one. So again, this is not utilitarian. I'm sure hospitals wouldn't like this. He says, "I'll tell you the truth. These are very difficult questions. I don't have clear proofs to it. I can't nail this down and say, look, this is a Hebrew expression. I can't nail this down and say, this is the absolute truth." But that's what he thought. He says, the hospital, of course, their decision to not help people who are, you know, just about to die, and sort of what someone might be in a vegetative state, to take away their ventilators. It could be true. If it's true that every day they save lots of people with it, even though it's not so clear, but they decided that, the hospital decided. And so then I would agree. And I would think that if we say that in order to save lives, we can even steal, right? I think most people would understand that in order to save your wife's life, you could steal some medicine or something, right? So even in this circumstance, where it's harder to pay back or what, but still, you're not allowed to do anything to take one person's ventilator over the other without their permission. Even if they're ready, he doesn't think that you should, you know, take one person off a ventilator to save someone else, even if the other person is healthier. Yes, and that would be like specifically stealing from one person to another. And he says, if two people walked in a desert and one is healthy, the other one's very sick, and they have nothing to eat, and they're in great danger, that they might both die, the person who's healthy cannot kill the other person in order to save his life. He doesn't have to give him any water, but he can't kill him. So over here, when you take off the ventilator, maybe you're killing this fellow in order to save the other fellow. So he says, using the jug of water analogy, can you kill the other guy? Right. So he says, so whoever was writing he says that from the doctor's writing, he understood that he leans to those who say that it's permitted. I don't understand that part. But in any event, so he's hesitant to take it away from one person for the other. But again, so if someone had a vaccine, was about to get a vaccine, and they were they needed it less, they were more likely to die anyway, or something like that. They already had the vaccine, can't take it away from him. He already had it. But in any event, let's go back to then we mentioned that if a third person has the water, so then he has to save the person who has the most chances. And maybe we'd even use that more random sort of thing, like, you know, who's holier, your Kohen or Levi, or, you know, so maybe we'd use that method. But if we go back to the original questions, let's take a look. Varying philosophy, right? So we said that Reb Shlomo Zalman Aruch didn't think that how much life you have left is significant. We don't give priority to younger over older. for that sort of reason. Certainly the investment and refinement that, well, we invested so much in the young person, we have to get something out of it. That doesn't cut it.
Question.
Yes, sir.
If the young people can have other children and the older people cannot, this is the bloods of your brother cries out to me, is that a consideration?
Right. Yeah, no, it's a great question, right? So just Dr. Joe says, when you kill one person, that is as if the blood of their children cries out. What blood? When Cain killed Abel, who knows if Abel was even married, if he had any children? But the potential for children, you're killing him. So he's saying, if you let the young person die, you're not just killing one person, you're killing so many. But the older person, he already had children. Right. I don't think in general we take that approach. Because
good.
It would essentially argue that the life of an older person was not worth as much as the other person. I think what the Mishnah meant when it said that when he killed Cain, it's his life and all the potential came from that person. I think it applies even if the person didn't have the ability to have children. I think it's Rabbi Yitz Greenberg read it to mean, and I think he may be onto something, that it means the person has infinite value.
Isn't it wonderful that we struggle so much with this? It's a tribute to our people and our heritage that we struggle so mightily with this. People don't do that. It's an extraordinary people we are. Remarkable.
Beautiful. Yes, we shouldn't take for granted that Jews have been debating these things for thousands of years. Yeah. Well, what's unusual is that it seems that the more some people have even suggested that the alternate view to the idea that when you have one jug, you should drink it rather than sharing it, that view is opposed to a Christian view. That the Christian view would say, oh, you know, let them both die. But, you know, and so the Jewish view is not so mushy. It is somewhat utilitarian. And it also values private property. The notion that it's my jug. Well, who cares? I'll hit you over that and I'll take the jug and now it'll be my jug. But somehow that does make a difference. It's yours. You have a right to it. You have a right to things that are yours. So it's interesting. So whether to save those at the highest risk or dying or save the most lives. So we saw both. So I don't have an answer for us. We saw both. We saw a view that said you should save those at the highest risk because someone who definitely will die, right? If I don't give my 95-year-old mother a vaccine in 3 months, then, you know, you'd be in grave danger by getting it. Whereas for me, you know, I would hope that if I got it, I would have a mild case. So it seems that her definite danger is greater than my doubtful danger. But on the other hand, there's a view that says, we mentioned Rabbi Oshri, you should save the most lives possible. So that could mean... forget the older people who might die anyway. Focus on the young people. Make sure everyone has, you know, huge immunity across the community. And then these hundreds of thousands of people who are dying will stop dying. What else? So the essential workers, I think we made some good arguments based on the Rambam, the utility, the king. It seems the utility does play some role. And certain basic logic to it. I mean, you don't have doctors, and who's going to give you the shot? You know, you don't have doctors and nurses, but and if the doctors are infecting people, then you know, they're going to cause harm, and that would, you know. So in the end, you know, if you possess it, if you're able to get it, then you know you probably have a right to take it. You say, well, you know, I only have a right to get it because I have special connections or what. That might be enough. If you have special connections to get it, it might be like you owned it. You had it. You use it. I would think. But that's a stretch to say that because I could access it better than someone else, that I can use it. Interesting question. Anyway, I don't have all the answers to all the questions, but it's that's the basic question. Where you want to save the most lives or the highest risk? And because the highest risk also comes with the highest risk of failure as well, because if they're at the highest risk to die from it, it might also be the highest risk to die anyway, to die. Now, relating to Dr. Joe's question a little bit, younger or older doesn't always matter because of the following. I know somebody was he was about a 75-year-old man. He married a 55-year-old woman. So who's going to die first? The 75-year-old man, right? No. The wife died at 65 of some kind of cancer. So you can't always guarantee that the older person, someone said that the older person will live less. Someone gave an example in Israel. The chances of an older person living a tranquil life in Tel Aviv, walking to the market every morning and coming home and I don't know, reading a newspaper, reading a book, the chances of his dying are low. The chances of a healthy 18-year-old who goes to the army, the chances of his dying are high. So it's not always, you know, that the older are more in danger. But yeah, it is very, you know, to me, it sounds very disturbing when you say that when some countries are considering, you know, neglecting the elderly. But there could be some logic to it if more people will be saved by giving to the younger, and that if the vaccine, again, I don't know the details of it, if the vaccine is not as effective with the older, then to give it to younger who would definitely be effective with might be a factor. Or you could argue the opposite, that they're more vulnerable. People who are definitely going to die, they come first. So that's the big question. And I'll leave that to greater authorities than me to give the final answer. But any other questions, comments
Rabbi,
for us? Yes.
So I know a lot of times in halakhic discourse, we have a topic, but you know, there'll be different people, there'll be different post-team who say different things, and we kind of leave it at that. You know, it's not, it's kind of subjective. But for this specific issue, is it like any other halakhic situation, or like where there's no right or wrong, or is it?
Yeah, because Joel Finzian didn't give a bottom line doesn't mean that.
That's not what I'm saying.
Doesn't mean there isn't one. Yeah. Rabbi Urbach, you know, had his bottom line. Rabbi the Tzitz Eliezer had his bottom line. Let's take a look. So, yeah, I'm just, you know, I don't know if I'm personally so comfortable.
I
want to distinguish between when something is not decided, when there are differences of opinion, doesn't mean there's no answer. Meaning, if your rabbi is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and you went to him or you always follow him, then there's an answer. He said what he said. That's it. You put the coin before the lady. I haven't resolved. But if you go to Rav Shetzer, he'll give you his particular opinion.
More practically, say hypothetically, you know, the Jewish community, the halakhic community, was in charge of distributing the vaccine for whatever reason. So someone at some point, someone's going to have to make that final decision.
Today we don't have an organized community, so we don't have a chief rabbi. We don't have an organized community like that. It doesn't work that way. We don't have that organized community, but generally speaking, let's say during this COVID crisis, generally what Rav Shechter Paskin, that's what people did. All the outside minyanim and the different things that we've done, generally, most people, you know, whatever Rav Shechter said, Rav Willig, we did. When there was a debate between Rav Shechter and Rav Willig or other posts, you know, so then people did different things. But it doesn't mean that we didn't have a bottom line. I'm not prepared to give one on this particular case. But again, the particular rabbis that we read, they had a bottom line in their readings of it. Thank you. Any other last questions or comments?
Rabbi, I was just going to say, in medicine, you know, you mentioned about taking away the ventilator and so forth, and it does take an act of Congress. I mean, an ethics committee has to get together and all that type of stuff. But in this particular crisis, there might come a time when under normal circumstances where we would not say, okay, this person really doesn't have a chance to live and we need the ventilator elsewhere. Now we do, unfortunately, may run into that situation. I'm not in the ICU, so I don't run into that situation. And it has little to do with the vaccine portion of it, except going up and grabbing it out, you know, as you mentioned, going in and grabbing it out of somebody's hand. But the crisis certainly has changed the way, even in medicine, that we look at some things.
Yeah, so some people were saying during a crisis, you have to save the most people. There was some discussion that during a crisis could be different than at other times. Although it's interesting, but regarding ventilators, some were saying that putting people on ventilators is actually has proven to be questionable. No, I don't know. I heard that recently that one relative who was on a ventilator, who was dangerously ill, and they were trying to avoid putting on a ventilator because apparently there's a lot of complications of putting people on ventilators for the COVID.
Right.
Have you heard
that? Right. Yeah. Well, I just know just in general, once you put somebody on a ventilator, the quicker you get them back off, the better off you are. And once you've had them on for 3 or 4 days, it gets, you know, each day that goes by, it gets harder and harder to get the body to go back and do what it's supposed to do and remember how to breathe and do all that type of stuff. So yeah, that makes mm-hmm. sense. And then on top of that, there's the acute respiratory distress syndrome from ventilators and ICU and severe illness and that type of stuff, which you could have on top of this COVID thing. So yeah, I can see that. Yeah. It's last ditch effort, certainly.
Yes. So anyway, well, thank God we're in a place where we're talking about vaccines now and,
amen to that.
Yeah. But there's definitely a tremendous amount of triage that will go on in the next year because they just cannot make 250 million vaccines in 3 months.
Right, right. Yeah, I heard that they say by fall, so a year, we'll have 6 vaccines out. And, you know, some people are thinking, well, I want to wait for this one, want to wait for that one. I like the adenovirus better than I like the RNA and that type of stuff. But really and truly, we're not going to have much choice. You're going to have to take what's available when it's your arm, it's your turn for the shot.
I heard some people concerned about taking the RNA. What's your view of, is that sound scary to take something that affects your RNA, which I guess affects your DNA?
No. I with looking at what they're doing and so forth, it really does. And I mean, I understand what they're saying because, you know, your RNA is what builds your DNA. And so if you're putting the little builders in there and they could potentially start, you know, making weird DNA or making your DNA different, then of course that, you know, causes some pause, but it can't really do that. But there's also, like I said, there's going to be one that's hooked to an adenovirus that you can get later. And then there's a few other, you know, the what gets them into your body is different, but the basic technology is the same thing. That spike protein and so forth. I read a nice thing that they said 12 days after the first shot, you'll have some immunity. Not perfect, but you'll have some. And then I think it was 10 days after the second shot, you should have the full effect of the shot, so of the vaccine. So that's looking positive.
That's good. They say some people are not going to come back for the second shot, and then we'll be left in limbo.
Right, right. Well, they say that the side effects are going to be significant enough in some people, about 10 to 15%, that they're going to say, well, I don't know if I want to go back or not. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is supposed to be even worse.
Yeah.
One lady in one of the tests said, take the second day off because you're not going to be able to work that day. You know, the day after you get the second shot.
Mm-hmm. So, second day is it's a double. The first day is half strength, and the second one's full strength.
Oh,
Dr. Brooks, I was going to ask. Is there any situation where you're better off not taking the vaccine? Is that ever for whatever technical reason?
The only thing I know right now is they don't know whether it's going to be approved in pregnant women and lactating women. So that's one thing that doesn't affect you and me, but it may affect our families and so forth. But since it's not going to be a live virus, you don't have to worry about immunocompromise and so forth. You know, like for instance, with some of the shots, like the attenuated flu shot, I always joke they just hit the flu over the head with a hammer a couple of times and it doesn't know what it's supposed to do, but it's still alive. And you wouldn't give that to somebody, let's say, with AIDS or with, you know, on methotrexate for rheumatoid arthritis or, you know, things like that. So, but no, none that I know of on this one.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to stop here. I thank everyone for coming, joining us. And, I think we've shown that there are tremendous ethical challenges that have been discussed over the centuries, and that there's certainly a basis for making these decisions. Although, unfortunately or fortunately, or it's the way it goes in Jewish law and Jewish life, there are different opinions about which way it should go.